Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In a decision both welcomed and feared across the country, Massachusetts' highest court today ruled that gay marriage cannot be prohibited under the state's constitution. And with that ruling, a national debate grows hotter still. As Massachusetts steps closer to becoming the first state to legalize gay marriage, Americans remain deeply divided over the morality and wisdom of opening the institution to same-sex unions. In this hour, we'll look at what happened today in Massachusetts, what it means for gay marriage in other states, and how gay marriage is likely to factor into the 2004 presidential campaign. Tonight on Point, a landmark ruling on gay marriage and its repercussions across the country. I'm joined in the studio tonight by WBUR reporter Fred Tice, who's been covering the court case that brought today's ruling. Good evening. Glad you're here with us, Fred.
Good evening, Tom.
Also with us tonight in the studio is On Point News analyst Randall Kennedy, professor of law at Harvard University. Good to have you here, Randall.
Thanks so much.
Fred Tice, take us into this detail, the detail of this case. Exactly what did the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court rule today?
Well, it ruled that under the Massachusetts Constitution, the state cannot prevent same-sex couples from getting married. It's as simple as that.
But they put a kind of spanner in here. They said for 180 days, this will not take effect. They're waiting for the state legislature to do something like what?
Well, basically, according to the legal experts I talked to today, and these are conservative as well as liberal legal interpreters of this decision, pretty much everyone is on the same page on this. They're saying that the Supreme Judicial Court has given the legislature 6 months to change the law so that same-sex couples can get married. It's not leaving the legislature any wiggle room on this. And in 6 months, if the legislature has not made that decision, then these couples interpret it that they can just go to whatever clerk's office they need to go to and register for their marriages.
And they will be married. Now, 1999, Vermont Supreme Court ruled that the state had to grant gay and lesbian couples the same rights as married couples, but that ended up coming through the legislature as something called a civil union, a different legal status from marriage. Could the Massachusetts courts do that?
In this case, the Supreme Judicial Court did not seem to leave the legislature room for that. It simply said that under Massachusetts law, same-sex couples have the right to get married. And the word marriage was key to this. It did not give the legislature an order to either pass marriage or grant same-sex couples the same rights as heterosexual couples would have. It simply said that the legislature has to pass whatever appropriate measures consistent with today's decision within the next 6 months.
So let's look at some what-ifs here, Fred. First of all, what if the state legislature simply doesn't act?
Well,
what if they do nothing?
The interpretation of the folks who won their court case today is that in 6 months, if they do nothing, the Supreme Judicial Court will then order the court, the lower court, to grant them their marriage license.
And what if at the other extreme they say no way and they begin steps to push through a constitutional amendment that would bar same-sex marriage?
Well, there the legislature doesn't have much room either, because under Massachusetts law, a constitutional amendment has to pass two consecutive sessions of the legislature. These are two-year sessions here in Massachusetts. And then it has to be put to the voters on the ballot. So the earliest that the voters could actually enact a constitutional amendment saying that marriage is only for one man, one woman would be November 2006.
So they could eventually reverse it, but it would be years from now. And in the interim, who knows how many same-sex couples might already have been married in the state.
You got it.
Fred Tice, what about the national implications here? First of all, for couples married in Massachusetts under this ruling, if they step outside the state, are they still recognized as married?
That's obviously a big question. The people who won their case today say they are intend to fully test that once they do get married. Likely a lot of other people will get married in Massachusetts and then go back home to their home states, or Massachusetts people will travel and try to see if they can get other states and, of course, the federal government to recognize their legal status. What has happened traditionally is that although the Full Faith and Credit Clause of the United States Constitution does, as as it says, asks states to give full faith and credit to the laws of other states, to the decisions of other states. It has been very lenient. The court, the federal courts, have been very lenient in allowing states to make an exception for marriage laws. And in general,
in other words, not forcing them to recognize marriages that they don't want to recognize.
You got it.
State by state.
Exactly.
And there's federal law here as well that came up just a few years ago, 1996, I believe, when the Congress stepped in. What did that say, Fred?
Well, that law said that no marriage would be recognized for the purposes of federal law, and that no state had to recognize any same-sex marriage of another state. And couples have tried to test this with the Vermont Civil Unions, with tax returns, federal tax returns, for instance, and they have not prospered. And likely people here in Massachusetts, of course, are going to try to file joint tax returns, federal tax returns. We'll have to see what happens. So far, it doesn't look good for the federal government recognizing these marriages here in Massachusetts.
So here we are. Randall Kennedy, been described today as kerosene poured on a fire that is brewing across the country around gay rights, and particularly around gay marriage. President Bush stepping up today, calling marriage a sacred institution between a man and a woman. He said the Massachusetts court ruling violated that principle. He said, "I will work with congressional leaders and others to do what is legally necessary to defend the sanctity of marriage." There's talk about a national constitutional amendment to bar this, Randall Kennedy. There's talk about a state-by-state battle against it. But look at the ruling itself, first of all. How big a deal is this?
This is a very big deal. This is a landmark opinion. This marks the first time that a state Supreme Court has squarely held that state law prohibiting gay marriage is in violation of the state constitution. And so this is a very big opinion. There have been court opinions that have come close. For instance, a decade ago in Hawaii, the Hawaiian Supreme Court got on the verge of saying what the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court said today. In 1998, Alaska's Supreme Court came close. But this opinion today by Chief Justice Margaret Marshall is the one that has squarely said that under a state's constitution, a state law prohibiting marriage between same-sex persons is in violation of the state's fundamental charter.
And Randall, what was the argument made in this state Supreme Court? Because it may be echoed in other state Supreme Courts, at least the argument, across the country. What was the rationale?
The rationale, there were two main themes. First, that marriage is a fundamental interest. Let me read you just a sentence from the court's opinion. "Because it fulfills yearnings for security, safe haven, and connection that express our common humanity, civil marriage is an esteemed institution, and the decision whether and whom to marry is among life's momentous acts of self-definition." The court said, because marriage is so important, because marriage is one of the basic civil rights of man, the state really has to have reason for prohibiting people from entering into that institution. And the court held today that there is no rational reason for the state to prohibit people from marrying simply because they are people of the same sex.
And the tradition of male-female, man-woman marriage did not enter in here?
Well, they talked about the tradition. The court wrote it was a wonderful opinion in my view. It faced up to the tradition. It said it recognized that it was staring tradition in the face here, but it said nonetheless, let's take a look at how important marriage is, and let's then ask ourselves whether there is sufficient reason for the state to prohibit people from entering into this institution that has so many consequences.
So too important to be denied to a citizen.
Well, too important to be denied for a citizen without good reason. And here they said that there was no rational reason. There was a second theme that was struck, and the second theme that was struck was the theme of equality. Here's another sentence from the opinion. "The history of constitutional law is the story of the extension of constitutional rights and protections to people once ignored or excluded." The people who are ignored and excluded in this case is, of course, gay people. And so liberty and equality, those are the two themes that are sounded in the Supreme Judicial Court's opinion in this case.
Randall, this is a state Supreme Judicial Court, the Massachusetts state's highest court.
That's right.
What about national implications here? Is this a tempest in a bottle? It does not seem to be. The president is on his high horse about it today. Critics all over the country are up in arms over it. We'll look at the political context of this later in the hour, but first, just legally, is there a knock-on effect here? Does this have consequences? Does it have implications for judicial rulings in other courts, other states, federally, for legislation in other states?
It has all sorts of implications. One, there's just the exemplary effect. Now you have a precedent. You have a very respected Supreme Court that has made this ruling. Certainly other judges are going to be paying attention. Furthermore, if it's the case that there is gay marriage in Massachusetts, then there are a whole bunch of other questions that come up. What happens when a gay couple moves someplace else? What happens when they want to be divorced? What happens when, so you can see that what happens when there are other states, two states, three states? Are you going to have a situation in which people are going to be married in certain states but not deemed to be married in others? This really does open up the box. That's why there are so many people from so many quarters that are paying attention to this decision.
Fred Tice, what did you hear today in your reporting? Is this likely to bring waves of gay couples come flying into Massachusetts to be married and to go back to their homes around the country?
Certainly, that's one scenario that's likely to happen. That people today were saying was likely to happen, particularly at the folks who won their case today. They thought a lot of people would come to Massachusetts and get married here and then try to exercise those rights in their home states.
And what about pushback locally? This has not been received with universal acclaim by any means. The governor said this must not stand, or words to that effect. Many legislators speaking up today, many groups saying this is just out of step with public opinion and cannot be allowed to go forward. Do they have a way to stop it?
Well, it doesn't look like they've got a way to stop it. There are some people, some conservative legal scholars that I spoke to today, who believe that Governor Romney and some of the conservatives in the legislature here, Governor Mitt Romney, have one option, and that is to try to do what was done in Vermont, just to, even though the Supreme Judicial Court did not ask for any kind of scenario
halfway scenario
we had in, as you see in Vermont.
So you're saying, in other words, make it a civil union instead of
a formal
marriage.
Go ahead and try pass civil unions and see what the Supreme Judicial Court does then. There's also the scenario that the legislature may just refuse to go ahead and change the laws. There have been constitutional battles in this state before between the legislature and the Supreme Judicial Court. They were over a citizen-passed law that would publicly fund elections. And in the end, although the high court said that law needed to be funded, the legislature refused to do it, and the law essentially became a dead letter. Now, that was an argument over funding. This is a somewhat different issue.
A very personal issue. Randall Kennedy, if the legislature does not act, does not create a vehicle for this specifically, what happens in 180 days when a gay couple walks into some city hall or magistrate and says, marry us?
I think what's going to happen is a couple's going to go in, ask to be married. It may very well be that they'll be refused, and then they will go to a judge and say, judge, order this registrar to give us the license. And it's at that point that this opinion will really kick in, and I think a judge will say, I have to give you the license. I have to order the registrar to give you the license, and then people will be married.
Fred, other cases around the country pending that may be affected by this decision today?
Yes, the leading case is in New Jersey. It is making its way to that state's highest court, very similar to the case here. There is a case in Nebraska that's kind of a reverse case, where gay and lesbian activists have filed a lawsuit against that state's Defense of Marriage Act. There is a law there that defines marriage as... as one man, one woman. And what the folks, the gay activists have done there is take the state to federal courts to challenge that state's act under the federal constitution, saying it's unconstitutional, it does not provide equal protection for everybody.
So ripples right across the country in a very big political debate to come. Fred Tice, WBUR reporter, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
You're welcome, Tom.
Randall Kennedy, stand by. We're talking tonight about the national implications of one state's high court ruling in favor of gay marriage. Are you celebrating tonight or seething? Is this a landmark pointing toward a better America or toward a diminished America? 1-800-423-8255. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the national implications of one state's high court ruling in favor of gay marriage. The Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court ruled 4-3 today that gay marriage cannot be prohibited under the state constitution. So the question, are you celebrating tonight or seething? Is America ready for gay marriage? Are you? And is marriage a fundamental right for everyone? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Gloria Bailey and Linda Davies are two of the plaintiffs in the Massachusetts gay marriage case. They've been partners for 32 years. Moments after today's court decision was handed down, Gloria Bailey explained why the ruling is the most important of her life.
Without a doubt, this is the happiest day in our lives. And the most important thing for us is knowing whatever comes ahead in the rest of our lives, we now know we can be at each other's side. That's the most important thing of all.
Gloria Bailey, plaintiff in the Massachusetts gay marriage case, speaking earlier today. National implications here. What do you think? Should equal protection under the law mean equal access to marriage? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined in the studio tonight by Randall Kennedy, On Point news analyst and professor of law at Harvard Law School. We're joined now from Chicago by Patricia Logue. She's national legal director of Lambda Legal, a national gay rights organization. Good evening and welcome, Patricia Logue.
Good evening.
Thanks for joining us. And from New York, we're joined by Maggie Gallagher, president of the Institute for Marriage and Public Policy, co-author of The Case for Marriage, Why Married People Are Happier, Healthier, and Better Off Financially. Good evening and welcome, Maggie Gallagher.
Hi, great to be here.
Maggie Gallagher, to you first. You are an opponent of gay marriage. How significant a development do you see this state high court ruling today?
I think the ruling is just breathtaking in its arrogance, in its ignorance, and in its indifference, really. You know, it's arrogant because it claims to itself the right to rewrite our most fundamental social institution for protecting children. And by the way, it calls everyone who disagrees with it a bigot or comes very close to doing so. It's ignorant. I mean, I read this court decision. This court has no clue why we have laws about marriage, what the history of marriage as a social institution is. It actually, when it goes to explain the importance of marriage to the Commonwealth, it says it's important to identify individuals, to distribute property, to save the taxpayers' money, and then to track important epidemiological and demographic data. There is nothing here about the core purposes of marriage, not just in this country or this tradition, but in every known human society, which is about giving children the mothers and fathers they need and society, the next generation that it needs. And it's ultimately really indifferent. I mean, what bothers me most is that there's no sense at all here about the risks involved in a time when, you know, for reasons that have nothing to do with gays and lesbians, marriage is in a profound crisis, a crisis that revolves exactly around how committed we are to the idea that children need mothers and fathers. To quote from the dissent of Judge Sossman, basically what the court said is that it's irrational for the legislature to prefer a proven successful family structure while denying the same benefits to a recent, perhaps promising, but essentially untested alternate family form. And the court just blithely assumes that there are no dangers and it is safe to proceed, an assumption that is not supported by anything more than the court's blind faith that it is so.
Maggie Gallagher, what do you make of this in terms of giving momentum to gay marriage rights across the country? Do you see, is it propelling that movement forward?
Well, I think that I agree very much with the legal analysis that Randall Kennedy offered. I think there's a broad agreement that, first of all, this is going to nationalize same-sex marriage as a legal matter. There will be suits in many cases. The question of whether state Defense of Marriage Acts, 33 states have Defense of Marriage Acts, and 4 states have constitutional amendments defining marriages between a man and a woman. And by the way, the reason the Hawaii High Court and the Alaska High Court were not the first courts to bring gay marriage to America is that the people stepped in and they passed constitutional amendments preventing it. So, I mean, there's going to be a national national political debate. There's going to be a 50-statewide legal debate, and that's ultimately going to be thrown to the Supreme Court. I think, by the way, you know, speaking of political analysis, that it's a pretty big disaster for the Democratic Party, and I say that, you know, with my best nonpartisan hat on.
Maggie, hold that thought. We're going to talk about political implications here,
sure.
But I want to turn first to Patricia Logue, if I may. Patricia, in Chicago, your group has been a very strong proponent of gay marriage. Maggie Gallagher calls that today's decision arrogant, ignorant, and indifferent. What's your view?
Well, I don't agree with that. I think history will show that this is a very courageous and very correct decision. This is a very well-respected court. Their decision is extremely thoughtful. It says quite clearly that what is available to some citizens should be available to all citizens. What is deeply important to heterosexuals is deeply important and necessary for gay couples as well. And to say that that is arrogant, indifferent, or ignorant is just wrong.
Do you see celebration in gay organizations, the gay community today, Patricia?
There's a lot of emotion and celebration in the gay community today. A lot of people seeing our relationships, you know, given the respect that they deserve and that there's progress on this issue. We all know it's a long road. It's a 50-state battle. It's really a battle to let people understand what their gay and lesbian neighbors go through by not having the same right to marry that they have. And it's a very real problem for those families and for their children.
And what's your sense of the prospects for gay marriage nationally now? Do you anticipate a knock-on effect here, a ripple effect, where this now becomes the law of the land in other states across the country?
Well, I think that equal marriage rights are an inevitability, but that it is a long road. You know, this is not a community that has moved quickly on this issue. You don't see people suing all over the country. You see people willing to take the time to educate their community, as GLAAD and its friends did in Boston, about what it means not to have the right to marry. And we ask people who are married, who've always had that as a life dream, to think for a moment, what would it be like to be told you cannot marry the person you love? You can marry someone that you have no attraction to, but you can't marry the person you love. And I think people come to understand that it affects people that they know personally, that it harms them, and it's not something that they want to see continue.
But Patricia, you know, public opinion polls show that a majority of Americans, not overwhelming, at least in the most recent ABC News poll that I've seen, but nevertheless, a majority do not support same-sex marriage. Do you expect this is going to be pulled into the political arena? Do you expect a popular backlash that will somehow knock this down, knock it back?
Well, I think if you track those polls over time, you see attitudes really strongly changing. The percentages that we see today are much closer to even than we saw only a few years ago. And again, that's because people are coming to understand what's at stake for our families. People like Maggie Gallagher and other folks who are committed to an opposite position will always try to stoke the fears of people on this issue and try to use it for political gain. But, you know, people don't get married for political reasons. As Gloria and Linda demonstrated, they get married for very personal reasons, and gay and lesbian people want that right for the same reasons as everyone else.
Randall Kennedy,
one second, Maggie,
if I may. Randall, there are centuries of tradition here that this flies in the face of. I mean, that's indisputable. As a legal scholar, how do you see the weight of that? Is there weight in that, or is there not?
Oh, of course there's weight to it. But what the Supreme Judicial Court said today is that even though tradition has weight, even though there are lessons that are often and sometimes useful lessons that are buried in a tradition, tradition is not decisive. This is a court that referred over and over and over again to another tradition in American life. The tradition, 300 years, for 300 years, states did not permit people of different races to marry. It was only in 1967 in Loving versus Virginia, aptly titled case. It was only then that the Supreme Court of the United States invalidated state laws prohibiting marriage across race lines. In the Massachusetts case today, the court over and over and over again reminded readers of that tradition and pointed out that, you know, now of course, people look back at that and wonder how could that have ever been the case, that the state prohibited people of different races from marrying. So tradition is important, but the court said that tradition is not decisive and should not be deemed to be decisive.
Maggie Gallagher, how about that? The court today drawing this parallel between what has been the law on gay marriage and what was the law prohibiting interracial marriage and saying the interracial was wrong and so is this.
Let me pause a moment and say, because it's very important to me, Patricia, I've spent the last 20 years of my life working to try to strengthen marriage in America. And I could be wrong about gay marriage. Anyone can be wrong. But I take exception to the idea that I'm coming on here in order to stoke fears or to serve a political agenda. And I think, you know, particularly rather than responding to the arguments that I actually make. In miscegenation statutes, what the court ruled is that the legislature was imposing on marriage in order to further things that had nothing to do with the purposes of marriage, in order to create a regime of white supremacy. I don't think we have marriage in order to express animus towards homosexuals or anyone else. I don't think the reason it occurs in every known human society, you know, in amid all the different religions and cultures, and it's always about getting the people who make the baby, you know, to be responsible for each other and the baby too. I don't think that that's a reasonable comparison. It's like saying that Social Security is age discrimination because you have to be old to get it. No, I'm sorry. That's part of the fundamental purpose of that institution, and it's not discrimination to sustain that fundamental purpose.
Randall.
The court actually talked about this question of the purpose of marriage. The Commonwealth, the state attorney general, said that gay people should not be allowed to marry, and he pointed to procreation as the central purpose of marriage. And the court today rejected that and said, well, you know, what about people who marry who decide not to have children? What about all the married couples that don't even have sex? The court said that the central purpose of marriage is to enable and to support people who want to make a commitment to one another that will be exclusive and lifelong. And if that's the purpose, then the court said, why can't gay people do that?
Let it go. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Janet's calling from Milwaukee. Hi, Janet. You're on the air.
Hi. I've just been counting in my head, and I think that Maggie needs a reality check. I personally have attended 7 different ceremonies of same-sex couples. Now, sometimes they call those marriage, and sometimes they called them ceremonies of commitment. That sort of differs by personal preference. One of those couples has 2 kids now. This is artificial insemination. If she's really into supporting families and supporting what's best for strong families, what about those 2 women and their kids? We don't suddenly force a single mother or a single father to marry somebody just to strengthen the family. Why can't 2 women raise a couple of kids?
Janet, we've got it. You're saying there's already a reality out there. Maggie Gallagher, how about that?
It's funny. That's what we were told all along on this marriage issue. You know, things have changed. There's nothing you can do about it. Because some adults are deciding to raise their children in alternate family forms, we now have to treat those alternately found forms as if, not only as if they're just as good, but as if they're just the same. I think that the law is lying when it says that. We don't know that is true. My judgment of the weight of evidence is that it's not true, and that, moreover, it's not just those 2 women and their children that's at stake. I mean, the definition of marriage, Randall, you talk about the courts just, you know, wrestling with this question of tradition. What I read is complete incomprehension of any, you know, rational understanding of the fundamental reasons why we have law around marriage. It's when people use this language about, you know, and it sounds really noble. Oh, marriage is about intimacy and it's about acts of self-definition. I mean, it's about everything except getting adults to focus on the fact that we have an obligation to conduct our intimate lives so that we don't deprive our own children of mothers and fathers. Now, not everyone's going to do that. You know, that doesn't mean you throw people in jail. But you don't change the one institution that exists to convey this message and to try to teach the next generation what the preferred family structure is in order to satisfy these adult agendas for affirmation, for intimacy, for legitimacy, whatever the adults have going on. Hmm. That's not, in my mind, the most important thing when it comes to marriage.
Patricia Logue, what's your answer to this argument that biology suggests that men and women ought to pair up to propagate the species and sustain it, and that marriage came about over centuries to sanctify that particular relationship?
Well, there are many traditional institutions in our country that over time we have learned to expand to other people.
But let's look at this specific one for just a moment. We've talked about parallels here, but what about the specific quality of a marriage and the kind of biological issues that have been seen at the heart of it? Does that have any weight? What do you think will ultimately be the impact of gay marriage on the whole institution?
Well, I think that to the extent that we allow committed couples to enter into marriages, that it advances the institution. I agree with Maggie Gallagher's assessment that, you know, the marriage in this country is going through some hard times. And, you know, it's hard for me as a gay person to sort of take this notion that when gay people start getting married, that suddenly that will cause instability in heterosexual married life, when in fact we have all kinds of problems with divorce and remarriages and whatever. And, you know, that house probably should be gotten in order. But I think that's a very different question from whether people who are in long-term committed relationships, many of whom are raising children, should have that same right. And I just must interject that regardless of what Maggie may believe on this issue, that the American Psychological Association, all the major mental health groups, American Academy of Pediatrics, American Medical Association, are all on the side of saying that children raised by lesbian and gay couples are as happy and as healthy and as well-functioning as any other children. So this idea that these children are not better off, no, we haven't had studies forever, but everything that's out there points to their success.
Maggie, I hear you there.
Yeah, almost all those studies are comparing single lesbian mothers to single heterosexual mothers. And, you know, in things like custody, they may be relevant. They have nothing to do with the proposition that children raised in radically motherless or fatherless families with two mothers and no father or two fathers and no mothers. I mean, I shudder to think about motherless children. I'm sorry, I'm enough of a sexist and enough as a mother myself, and you're a mother, Patricia. I mean, this new idea that we're going to have the state involved in institutionalizing it and making it easier to deliberately deprive children of either a mother or a father. I'm sorry, I understand that it's really very important to you, but I think that there are larger issues at stake here.
I don't get the deliberate deprivation of mother or father. How does that come in, Maggie Gallagher?
What you do when you institutionalize same-sex marriage is essentially you're trying to make it easier and affirm the idea. I mean, put it this way. You have to accept one of two propositions. Either marriage has nothing to do with children at all, which is really quite a striking idea, or it's the place where we think we should encourage people to have children, and there are various laws that make it easier for you to get children and have children.
I see, so you're saying in a gay marriage, by definition, there's either a biological father or a biological mother missing from the relationship.
I'm saying that the purpose, one of the consequences of gay marriage, of unisex marriage, really, to name it properly,
mm-hmm.
is it's not about the sexual orientation of the parents. It's about the absence of a mother and father in the home. You know, what you're saying essentially is that it's a good idea for these are the same as a mother and a father in the home. So whenever you talk about marriage, I do this all the time. I go around, I tell people it's important to support marriage because children need mothers and fathers. Well, gone. In the state of Massachusetts, that will no longer be true. The laws of the state of Massachusetts will be saying children don't need mothers and fathers. They need abstractions called stability and, you know, commitment. They need those things, but they don't need mothers and
Mary
fathers.
Mary Gallagher, Patricia Logue, Randall Kennedy, please stand by. In Massachusetts today and maybe in other states, or maybe not, a political firestorm, a backlash could be brewing here. We're talking tonight about the national implications of one state's high court ruling in favor of gay marriage. Is marriage a fundamental right for everyone? And have the courts gone too far here? Is this an issue that should be legislated? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the national implications of one state's high court ruling in favor of gay marriage. The Massachusetts highest court today ruled 4-3 that gay marriage cannot be prohibited under the state's constitution. That will have implications right across the country. You can join the conversation tonight. Is America ready for gay marriage? Are you? And how do the politics of this issue play out? Is this political dynamite? Will it divide the nation? by party. Is this a sea change moment or a political call to arms? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. My guest tonight from Chicago, Patricia Logue, National Legal Director of Lambda Legal, a national gay rights organization. From New York, Maggie Gallagher, President of the Institute for Marriage and Public Policy, co-author of The Case for Marriage. With me in the studio, Randall Kennedy, professor at Harvard Law School and On Point News analyst. And joining us right now from Boston is Alan Wolf. He's professor of political science and director of the Boise Center for Religion and American Public Life at Boston College. Good evening and welcome, Alan Wolf.
Thanks. Good to be with you, Tom.
Thanks so much for joining us. Alan Wolf, how do you see today's ruling and the general movement around gay marriage intersecting with the politics of the upcoming presidential campaign? How does this fit into America's political conversation?
Well, it's regardless of what one thinks about the decision, I personally think it's an eloquent and beautifully written and very moving decision. Politically, it's going to be disastrous for the causes I believe in, and its main implication is going to contribute to a president of the United States' reelection that I would rather not have reelected.
Paint that picture. How? Why?
Well, the culture war issues like this really do benefit the Republicans. This is an issue that majority sentiment in the United States is not where the Massachusetts court is. That doesn't bind the court. The court has to interpret law. It doesn't follow election returns. But public opinion is definitely not supportive of the idea of gay marriage. I think public opinion has changed dramatically over the last 50 years on this issue in the direction of far greater tolerance. I mean, we used to talk about this as a crime. We used to talk about this as sodomy. We used to blackmail people because of their sexual orientation. We're far from those days. There's been a sea change of attitudes. People are much more tolerant. But it's a tolerance of privacy. It's a tolerance that says whatever you do in private is none of our business. Marriage is a very public act. It involves states. That is government. It involves churches. And when it comes to marriage, people who can be very tolerant of a right to privacy will turn around and say, no, this is where I draw the line.
Which makes you say this may be politically disastrous, and I guess you mean for the Democratic Party or perhaps for a Democratic candidate. How exactly do you see the political fat hitting the fire on this element?
Well, if Howard Dean gets the nomination, which is what the pundits are saying, although I have no idea, you know, he's a governor from a New England state that has civil unions.
Vermont, since 99.
Vermont, running against a committed evangelical Christian from the state of Texas. It's almost as if the stars were aligned to put this issue on the map in a way that will, I think, put Democrats in a very, very uncomfortable position. Republicans will be very unambiguous about this, is my guess. They will have a clear position. There won't be any ifs, ands, or buts. I could easily imagine Democrats saying, well, you see, I support civil unions, but on the other hand, I don't support gay marriage.
Which is the position that most of the Democratic candidates, I believe, have taken.
I think it's a position that all of them, to one degree or another, have taken, except maybe Dennis Kucinich. But, and I don't really consider him a presidential candidate, he'll forgive me. On this issue, the Democrats are likely to come across looking as if they just consulted the latest focus groups to find out sort of where the wishy-washy position is here that can enable them to appeal across a wider base. And I don't think that that's going to play against what I would believe would be a simplistic, but nonetheless, you know, and clearly articulated position that would be coming from the Republicans.
So you're describing this as a great big softball pitched to George Bush in an era when we've got so many economic questions and issues of war and terror and trade and all the rest. You're saying it could end up being decided once again around a culture war issue, Alan Wolf.
Well, if someone told me that on September 12, 2001, that the next election will be fought over gay marriage, I would have said, no, you don't understand. The whole world has changed. We're now talking about security. We're now a unified country. Osama bin Laden killed us all, whether we were gay or straight. I went into print saying that the culture war was dead after September 11th. I was wrong. It's back, it's alive, it's furious, and it's going to be there in 2004.
Patricia Logue, let me turn to you then. Under this administration, there had been some very tough language about gays. And of course, gays, like everybody else, are facing all the other issues that the country and the world are facing right now. If this decision, if movement toward in favor of gay marriage should come with a consequence of many more years of Republicans in the White House, is that A-okay with you?
Well, of course, we're nonpartisan. I would say that this issue is one that people will try to use for their political ends, of course.
Alan Wolf says they will succeed.
Well, that people will try to divert attention from one issue to another. That's our political tradition. I think a lot of people sort of see the administration as in some ways the invasion of the busybodies and trying to tell us all, the righteous way that we should all live our lives and how countries should conduct themselves. And, you know, these are things that are going to play out in our country. Do I think that most Americans are focused on this issue or believe the sky is going to fall or are going to choose the next president based on this issue? No. Do I think most people in America want a constitutional amendment, sort of the, you know, stomp the flea by bringing in the infantry? I think most people want this to play out over time, as social issues do in our country, and they're going to wait and see.
Maggie Gallagher, what about it? How big a factor in next year's presidential election?
I agree with Alan, but I don't think he's described the dilemma properly. The reality is that Republicans are united more or less three-quarters against gay marriage, whereas Democrats are split. It splits the Democratic base, so there's no good position on this issue for a Democrat to take because he's going to offend someone. And in particular, my impression, and I don't have poll data on this, is that African Americans are steaming about the use of the civil rights mantle for this purpose, and that, you know, to the extent this becomes a big issue, there's going to be a strong tendency for a lot of them to want to sit on their hands and not identify as Democratic. So, you know, as long as the Republicans conduct this as a marriage issue and not a homosexuality issue, and I have no idea if they will. I mean, they have interest groups at stake, some of whom are primarily concerned about homosexuality, and I don't think that includes the administration. But in any case, if they run it as a marriage issue, they're going to create a huge headache for the Democratic Party that I don't see how they get out of.
Sounds to me like political dynamite. Irene is calling from Winthrop, Massachusetts. Hi, Irene. You're on the air.
Thank you. I have an observation and a question for Mr. Kennedy about two procedures that have existed in other legal systems that might solve this. I think a lot of the emotion comes from conflating the civil rights of marriage with emotional or religious ideas.
How do you get those apart? Marriage has been pretty close to religion for a long time, hasn't it, Irene?
But, you know, there are other long-established legal traditions where that's not necessarily the case. For example, in France, you have the civil code. You have to be married civilly. Mm-hmm. And if you wish to be married in your church, you go separately and you're married in your church. Why can't we have civil unions for everybody, heterosexual couples as well as homosexual couples, that convey the rights of law upon marrying couples? And then if you wish to, I hate to use the word sanctify because I'm quoting George Bush, whose attitudes I don't like, but if you wish to have religious blessing on this because you are a religious person, you can have a separate religious ceremony.
Irene, let me ask you, I'll turn to Randall Kennedy here, but let me just ask you, did you really believe that that would thread the needle here, that that would make everybody happy?
No, it's just what I think, and it's worked in other countries. It has worked. It worked well in France for a long time.
Yeah, and your second question?
It's a question about a second institution that we've lived with pretty well for a long time that I think is very analogous, and that's common law marriage. We have 50 different states. We have 50 different laws about common law marriage. They've changed over the millennia, and different states have managed to accommodate what constituted common law marriage in another state, even though, although you can be married in common law, you can't be divorced at common law, so that if you move to another state, you have to somehow have your marriage declared.
Off it goes. Irene, great. Thanks very much for calling. Randall Kennedy, pick these up. Can we tease these things apart, the kind of sacred and the secular of marriage?
Well, I think that other people are trying to do what the caller wants. That is to say, some way to evade the culture war. One way to do it is, you know, civil unions. And there are a lot of people who say, listen, what's the problem with civil unions? The governor of the Commonwealth, Mitt Romney, says, you know, let's have civil unions. Let's have equality with everything except marriage. People want to draw the line at marriage. I don't think that you can evade the issue, because I think what's going on here is that gay people want not only the benefits, not only the tax benefits or the other sort of tangible benefits. They want the symbolic benefit, the symbolic sanctification that comes with marriage. And as soon as you mention the word marriage, you've thrown up the window which lets in religion, which lets in morality, which lets in all of the emotional, symbolic issues that makes people's blood pressure go up.
But that symbolic sanctification is exactly what a lot of people don't want to extend here. Patricia Logue, what about it? Would civil union status, if it brought benefits and guarantees equivalent to marriage, be good enough?
Well, let's just be clear that we're only talking about civil marriage. Nobody's trying to tell any religion who it can and can't marry. And so, you know, the name that we have for civil unions for straight people in this country is marriage. And what we are saying
Hold it there. Vermont made a distinction. They call it civil unions on purpose. So what are you saying? Is it an acceptable compromise to you to call it something else, call it civil unions and be done?
My point was really just that civil marriage, which is what these cases are about, is a civil institution. It's not the religious institution, and nothing that we're talking about here forces any religion to do something they don't want to do. Civil unions are extremely important, forward, progressive step. It's not marriage. You know, nobody is, in the heterosexual community running out there saying that, hey, I really look forward to getting civil unionized.
You're essentially saying, yes, the homosexual community wants marriage.
Well, we want equality. You know, we don't want a separate but equal. We don't want a two-tiered system. And, you know, we're equal citizens in this country. Do I believe that people of goodwill think that civil unions is sort of a marker of where much of the country is? Yes. Do I think that the fact that we have made the case for equal marriage rights has moved people to that position in a way that they would never have moved before because they see the inequality and they're searching for a way to remedy it in good faith? Yes. Hmm. Do I think it's true equality? No, I don't.
Pat's calling from Lexington, Kentucky. Hi, Pat. You're on the air.
Hello.
Good evening.
I would just like to pose this thought. Hopefully it'll be thought-provoking.
Please.
I'd like to know where these people think that the institution of marriage was originated.
Is that a question with an answer baked in it, Pat? Are you pointing to the Bible here?
It is, and that is where marriage was originated. Yeah. And all you have to do is go to that same place and find the answer to this question.
And what answer does that give you, Pat?
Well, the answer that it gives me is, and I love these people, but I don't love what they're doing, and I believe sincerely that the Bible says that homosexuality is wrong, and then to add marriage on top of it is, it just flies in the face of God, I believe.
And Pat, let me just ask you, it may be obvious, but would this factor into your decision in a voting booth next year?
Absolutely.
Pat, we've got it loud and clear.
Can I say something?
Alan Wolf, please.
Yeah, on the political thing, I was very moved by what Patricia said about equality. I mean, it's true that, as Maggie Gallagher says, Democrats are going to be in a very difficult position here because whatever they do, they're going to alienate someone. But I've heard at least one Democratic candidate, and I'm not endorsing him, but Richard Gephardt, whose child is gay, talk very movingly and very, very profoundly about what that means to him. I think it's possible for Democrats to cut through this and maybe even to get some advantage if they talk honestly, if they don't try to split the difference and look at focus groups, but talk movingly and honestly about the dignity of people and why all people deserve respect and dignity. It may not win over the caller, Pat from Lexington, who just called.
Yes.
But I think it's going to win a lot of people, and I think it's the only hope that the Democrats have on this issue, and I hope they follow it.
Alan Wolf, prognosticate for us just for 1 minute. Look out 10 years. Is this a movement that's going forward, or do you see a political backlash that somehow shuts it down?
Well, you know, I'm not a progressive. I'm also taken with what Randall Kennedy said about how we look back on Loving versus Virginia. But I could see we could look back two different ways. We could look back and say, how are we ever so stupid that facing a marriage crisis and facing the fact that people really wanted to get married, we actually tried to stop them. And we'll congratulate ourselves on that. But I can also see us saying 10 years from now that this was a high point of a kind of personal liberation and we've become a much more conservative country and we shut that down. So I really think it can go either way.
Alan Wolf, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thanks, Tom.
Alan Wolf, professor of political science and director of the Boise Center for Religion and American Public Life at Boston College. Maggie Gallagher, I'm sorry we're out of time, but thank you so much for joining us.
A pleasure. Thank you so
Maggie
much.
Gallagher, president of the Institute for Marriage and Public Policy in New York, and Patricia Logue in Chicago, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Patricia Logue, Brooke, National Legal Director of Lambda Legal, a national gay rights organization. Randall Kennedy, what an interesting hour. Thanks for being along.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.